hailing frequencies are open. Welcome to the Infinite Potato Alliance.
Welcome to That Star Trek Podcast.
Are you out of your mind?
Watch and learn. This is going to be awesome.
This is your place for detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek.
You are Starfleet to the core. I can smell it on you.
Join us as we dive into the newest content coming available, as well as retrospectives of the past series and films.
Do we need a mutiny today to prove who we are?
Now, on with the show.
We've only just begun.
Hi, folks, and welcome to That Star Trek Podcast, the show that knows the difference between Samuel Kirk and Corporal Hudson, mostly. I thought it was a good joke. Anyway, tonight we are talking about the ninth episode of Strange New Worlds entitled All Those Who Wander. And joining me tonight on the in the virtual studio, at the virtual table, whatever the hell you want to call it, is Sean. How you doing?
Who is Corporal Hudson?
He's from Aliens.
Oh, okay. Now I get it. Okay.
Game over, man.
Trust me, it's hilarious.
The hacks is scary, yes.
And John, how you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
And Chris.
Hi.
And Jen.
Salutations.
And Scott.
We are here to boldly go where no one can hear you scream.
Nicely done, nicely done. So, All Those Who Wander is the ninth episode, as I said before, of season one of Strange New Worlds, debuted Thursday, June 30th, 2022, written by Davey Perez and directed by Christopher J. Byrne. A pivot into sci-fi horror delivers with real scares and emotional punch. That's not IMDb, that's trekmovie.com. So that's not really a synopsis, that's more of a review, but anyway. Basically, it's aliens done with Gorn and Star Trek people. And this is, if I may be so bold as to say, the penultimate episode of this season. And also, much to my sadness, did some digging. There's no Star Trek following this for any established amount of time.
Yeah, that all they've said is that Prodigy is coming back later this year, but they haven't established when. They're going to show the last 10 episodes of Prodigy.
Yeah, both Lower Decks and Prodigy just say 2022. Everything else is 2023 with not even a aiming for such and such a month. They're not committing to anything right now.
Yeah.
So
I would expect them in the fall probably, but yeah, it's just me guessing.
Yeah, you know, but it's just, it's odd that this far along they're not giving us even a perspective time frame that they're aiming for. So, all right, let's go around the table and find out what you thought of the episode. Sean?
I liked this episode. I had some problems with some of the stuff, but yeah, I mean, everybody keeps saying they're doing Alien. I don't think that they were ripping off Alien, just because you can't rip off Alien without people knowing, hey, you're ripping off Alien. I think it was more of a homage to Alien. But yeah, I mean, it's another one of Strange New Worlds this season has had a thing with having their episodes doing one thing all the way up until about the last 5 minutes and then doing something that you completely didn't expect to happen. And that's happened at least three times this season, for me anyway. And and they did it again this week, and we'll get into it, I'm sure. But yeah, for the most part, overall, I like the episode.
Cool. Yeah, definitely the ending I did not see coming. I'm not going to go into too much about what I thought of it just yet. But this really felt like a finale as opposed to a penultimate episode. But we'll talk
because I think that, okay, never mind. I'm not going to say that right now. I'll wait until everybody's through.
John.
I liked it. I can't say it was disappointing because I thought it was a well done episode, but it was disappointing in the sense that I feel most of the shows this season have taken a trope and kind of done, you know, kind of twisted it a little bit or done something you didn't necessarily expect to happen. But this didn't really do that. This was pretty standard horror movie, you know, horror episode. There's a monster in the dark, you know, the abandoned warehouse slash transport ship slash whatever. It's hunting us. I'm not saying that they didn't do it well, but, you know, this may be Strange New Worlds may be a victim of its own success in that they've kind of set the bar so high that when they just do a regular good episode as opposed to something that is, you know, more quote unquote impressive in some way, it seems like a letdown, even though it really wasn't. It was a perfectly fine episode.
Okay. Chris.
It was a chest busting good time. I don't know how else to put it. You guys are tiptoeing around that it's an homage. It's evocative. It was a ripoff of Aliens. It was just Aliens. I call it TOS remake does Aliens remake is the way I saw this week's episode. And not to say that any of that was especially bad. It was very entertaining. It was very, you know, tense and I really enjoyed it, but it's nothing we haven't seen before, and it is certainly just a swipe on one of the most popular franchise films of all time. I mean, there's just no denying it. It's Alien. It's just Alien. Like, they just brought Alien to the Trekverse.
Yeah.
Complete with Newt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They had Newt. They had the Chestbusters. They had... Okay.
Hey, you know, they came out of the dude's back this time.
Okay. I'm sorry, the backbusters.
Oh, wow.
I think they would have come out wherever was convenient, honestly.
And there was more than one of them. There was like four of them that came out of that one girl.
I like the way that they expanded the Gorn. This is now totally into reboot, sort of retreading and retrofitting Trek history, because we've discussed before that Spock hadn't heard of the Gorn in Arena. And
that's
now
not true.
He's got direct contact with the Gorn.
He never said he'd ever heard of them.
I think that they no one had heard of them. I think you had confirmed it, Rick. Anyway,
regardless,
the Gorn was largely an unknown in the original series. And now it's so bad and so traumatic, and they're just like the ultimate bad guys now of the Trekverse, which I love. I think it's great because I think the Gorn is, you know, one of the species that is the most iconic and the least explored. So why not, you know, lean into it? But at the same time, if you're going to do something with the Gorn, try to do something besides a ripoff of Alien.
The thing was in Arena, it wasn't that they didn't know about the Gorn. It's they didn't realize that's who they were fighting until they got to the planet that the Metrons sent Kirk and the Gorn captain to.
Yeah, we can let the listeners correct us or supplement that as need be, but at the end of the day, it's inconsequential. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
Now the Gorn, you know, they're here to stay. They're like, wow, they're the big bad.
Dog agrees with you. Jen?
Yeah, I agree with Chris. It was basically, I saw it more as a ripoff. But also throw in some Predator, because you notice the Gorn had like infrared sight and all that stuff, which the Predators also have. So they throw in a little bit of Predator too with this. But I was just like, okay, that as soon as I saw the kid, I went, I'm not saying it's Aliens, but it's totally Aliens.
It's Aliens.
Yeah.
And
I mean, come on. And I mean, I enjoyed it. It was entertaining, but there were so much like beats that I caught, like, oh, look, there's two crewmen we've never seen before. Yep, they're going to die.
Cadet and Ensign Dead Meat. I mean, Lieutenant Dead. Oh, I owe him a drink now.
I mean, they even went into the, hey, I found something. I was like, oh, no. Oh, God. They're gonna
oh, die. Yeah. As soon as that guy came up and got his promotion and it was somebody that we had never seen before, I looked at my wife and said, he's dead.
Yes, yeah, same.
Like, hey, you want to sign this death well certificate be, before you sit back down?
Well, see, that's one of the things.
Wearing a red shirt.
That's one of the things that I was kind of hoping that they would. Because yes, that's obviously that's what you expect is that they're gonna kill the oh I just made promotion and never seen me before blah, blah, blah. Like I was that was one of the places where I was kind of hoping that they would do the thing that I didn't expect them to do, but they didn't.
Yeah, they killed off but Sam is still with us. Sam is still with us.
Sam has to be with us. I mean,
yeah.
And we can talk about. Because... We can talk about a lot of that later based on the ending of the episode.
Oh, kisses. Bobby kisses.
But all right. But yeah, all together, I pretty much predicted, except the ending, I did not predict the ending. But the rest of it, I pretty much figured out as they were going. They're like, yep, they're going to die. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. I predicted all of it except the very end. So overall, I did like it, though.
Okay. Scott?
The Star Trek uniform piece that had already moved to the top of my want list got even better because the those jackets come with hoods now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point.
Gotta have one.
They'll probably only be like $600.
Only.
I've got a credit card. Anyway, I am in agreement largely with what most everyone is saying for this episode. Enjoyable. It was aliens. You knew who was going to die before the episode even started. But it didn't make it bad, just made some elements predictable. This episode of Strange New Worlds is... once again, which this has happened a couple times since the beginning of this new Trek Renaissance, and that is trying to establish itself as the
oh god damn it,
the goriest, most violent episode of Star Trek since TNG's Conspiracy with the great exploding Commander Remick. But yes, overall, I enjoyed it. It looked great. I was okay with the Gorn design. They were a bit too spindly, a bit too animal, and not quite as humanoid as I was hoping.
Well, they were babies still, though. But I see your point.
Which is why if we see them again, I'm hoping that they show us some adult Gorn, because I would like to see their interpretation of what we saw in Arena. Which I still hope is closer to the design from Star Trek Online, because I still love the Gorn design in that game.
Agreed. Yeah.
But yeah, overall, yeah, it was good stuff. I'm glad it was not the season finale, because Strange New Worlds has been able to either be a really great episode of Trek or an interesting take on an established genre or familiar trope that they put a Star Trek spin on. This was Star Trek does space horror and suspense. And they do it fine, but for a season finale, I want them to do Trek as best they can. And we got one more week for that, so I'm excited to see what they do with that.
I'm kind of, and this is completely a theory because I haven't read anything about the finale, but I think that the finale, they're going to bring Angel and Cybok, and it's going to be part one of a two-parter, and we'll have a cliffhanger for the end of the season. That would be
cool, yeah.
But I have a science question, because I don't know... I'm not an expert on lizard physiology, but these Gorn, they reproduce by spitting on things and there's eggs in it and stuff, but these are baby Gorn, and they haven't mated yet. So how are they reproducing with eggs, egg sacs, or whatever?
As we learned from Jurassic
lizards
Park,
can do that.
Life finds a way.
No, monitor lizards do that. It's called, what is it? Parthenogenesis. They can just have babies. They just
some of them they can change gender. So
that is what I was referring to.
Yeah,
referring to.
But they don't even need to do that. They can just make eggs. They don't need to have another individual
that
involved.
That is what I was referring to. That's how Blue had her baby. It's baby.
Okay.
Sorry, I spilled my drink.
I was assuming that there was some answer that there's a lizard that's able to have babies without having fertilized eggs or whatever, but I didn't know. But there's also the fact that these are like adolescent Gorn. I wouldn't think that you would think that they would have to be mature Gorn to be reproducing, but you know, you got a 40-minute show. What are you going to do?
Oh, and Tribbles are born pregnant, so
yeah, right. And they're pregnant with flavor.
So I liked it. I agree that this was an absolute ripoff of Aliens, but I didn't mind. Which is a
I'm the only one that doesn't call it a ripoff.
Yes. but none of us, it doesn't bother us, but it's
no.
The only reason I say that is because I wouldn't call it a ripoff just because I don't see how you can rip off something that everyone obviously knows that you're ripping that off. I mean, Star Trek fans are going to know Alien. It's not like they're ripping off something that you've never seen before.
So when you go to the dollar store and you buy the Revengers.
Well, this is Star Trek. Yeah, this is Star Trek, not Snakes on a Train. Transmorphers.
I'm just saying, like it's a well done ripoff, but it's still a ripoff. Yeah. Like when I say that, I don't mean it necessarily derogatorily. I mean that they, as Scott said, they adapted the formula to Star Trek, but. No, I mean that's what the story is. That's what the monster is. That's what these characters are.
It was beat for beat taken. You know, if you want to call it an homage, fine. But you know, Alien was by no means original, and Aliens was a different thing altogether. You know, it was the monster in the haunted house picking off the crew members one by one. This was really done well, and there were some incredible character beats in this episode. The breakfast in Pike's quarters was great. Mbenga was throwing some really funny shade at Spock. I don't know if y'all caught it, but Spock says, you know, the Peregrine made an unscheduled emergency landing, and Mbenga went, is there ever a scheduled emergency landing?
I did catch that, yeah.
Hang on, where did I put my notes? you know, the hug with Chapel and Spock was like second only to the kiss in the pirate episode. In that, wow, just Bush just keeps blowing me away with her performance, and you know, it was like it was awkward, but it was awesome at the same time, and I was really impressed with that. I like the horror aspect. The only thing I really didn't like about this, and I've been trying to think, and I haven't really like done any searching to see if there's a trope for it, but Newt. Oriana, was almost like an anti-fridge. Okay. You know, a lot of y'all are familiar with the trope of fridging someone.
Yes.
You bring someone in, usually a woman.
Usually a love interest, too.
Well, yeah. Solely for the purpose of having them be in love with the main character, and then they get killed, and that gives the main character their revenge.
Motivation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oriana was kind of like the opposite. If she wasn't there, with the exception of La'an leaving at the end, it wouldn't have made a difference to the story. She didn't do anything except be there for La'an to care about. And, you know, unlike, you know, like you Newt in Aliens, at least she had an arc. And there was a relationship built up with her and Sigourney Weaver. Now I know we got 40 minutes, so it's not like you're going to get the kind of depth in a 42-minute episode that you can get out of a 90-minute movie. But still, they really didn't do anything with Oriana except have her be scared and go hide in the cold room, which there could have been any number of ways they could have figured out, hey, the Gorn don't like cold. La'an could have known.
They're lizards.
Well, okay, I will... Well... My Spidey sense is like, I don't know if Chris is going to. Chris, are you, do you have a thing to say?
Go for it, John.
I'm going to telepathically hijack you on that. So, first, if there weren't any survivors down there, they would have left. Like, they would have just left. But more importantly, it allowed La'an to. Quote unquote, exercise her demons because there's this little girl who's in the situation that she was in. And again, as it ties into the end of the show, we're spoiling now, people. A reason to leave the ship.
And that's my point.
Storyline.
I'm not objecting to her being there. It's just they didn't do anything with her other than have her be a MacGuffin for La'an to care about. She did nothing to further the story.
That's all she needed to do. I was fine with it. It was a monster episode. Like, that's the thing. Like, if this was not an emotional arc episode, it was a monster episode. They ran for the monsters. They killed the monsters. The monsters killed them. That's all you had to do. The fact that they, I don't know if a death scene counts as character stuff, but the fact that they wove in emotional stakes beyond death or aside from death, I should say, was kind of a bonus. But no, that's, I mean, I don't, again, yes, you're right. I don't have a problem with it. That's what I expected. And it's mildly disappointing that they didn't exceed my expectations. But by the same token, they didn't not meet my expectations either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. From a hardware wonk standpoint, I was a little miffed and disappointed aren't really the right words, but they went out of their way to say that the Sombra class starship was made from the same parts as the Constitution class. And then it was exactly identical to a Constitution class so they could use sets.
It was totally a Constitution class ship. I don't even know why they did that.
So. Yeah, that's why call it a different. Why not just say it's a Constitution class that crashed? Because
didn't they say
was it smaller? But even when they were towing,
they were the same size.
It was the same ship.
I don't know. They were using
the same sets. I mean, it was this was a bottle episode, basically.
I just took it like when a car manufacturer releases the same car under a different name. I don't know why, but they do it. So
didn't they say it was made of mostly the same parts?
Well,
mostly.
They get the warp core from Kmart instead of Costco. So
I considered it to be a knowing move on the part of the writers and the production staff, because for example, in TOS, they would have found a way to reuse existing sets for something like this, and they would have woven in maybe, a mention somewhere in the episode that would explain why it looks exactly the same.
Yeah, when they called it the Defiant.
When the real reason is we're saving
and the
money.
Exeter.
we need to save some money, so let's use the same sets and dress it up. Well, are people going to notice? Oh, we'll just say it's because XYZ. Good enough. I think they did that on purpose because it's yet another way that Strange New Worlds is taking some of their cues from TOS and winking while they do it.
But why did they make it a different class of ship? They were just because they can do anything on the outside as far as like making a CG model. It would cost just as much to make a different class of starship, I think, than just to basically a constitution class. And I think that if you're inside of a Federation starship, you can say there are similarities because it's all coming off the same manufacturing line. They're just going to use it in different ways. So it was another reason, like, it's like the newt. It is a constitution. It's not a constitution. It's sort of a constitution. It's there for no reason at all, except to be like, to say, yes, we are ripping off aliens. Yes, we are ripping off a constitution class. It's funny. I usually have so many things to say, and so vociferously and so passionately. I have almost nothing to say about this episode. It was aliens. It was just aliens on a constitution class that wasn't a constitution class with Newt who wasn't Newt. Why? I just don't get it.
Now, one thing that I really liked, and I even had to stop my second watch through this afternoon to look it up, because when they got onto the Peregrine, there was a musical cue as they were coming in that sounded very Wrath of Khan to me.
A little bit,
and,
yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. And I looked up to see who did the music for this episode. And she's done the music for the entire series. Her name is Nami. Oh, hang on. Merlumad. I wrote badly. Mulumad. I actually didn't look up how to say her name. But then I had to double check because I wanted to make sure I was remembering right. It was kind of a musical homage to James Horner, who did the music for both Wrath of Khan and Aliens.
Hmm.
But I couldn't find any like interviews with her that said that, you know, that was on purpose or anything like that. But,
so they were ripping off that too.
No, that it was Horner. And it was only that one cue. The rest of it was
well, later on there was like the Jaws theme to kind of raise tension too. I kind of
some leitmotif there.
Dun, yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. But mm-hmm. Horner was, I think, pretty well known for ripping himself off too. I heard.
Yeah, he was. I mean, Hans Zimmer does it too.
Yeah, there was a. I don't know what movie it was, but I was like, this is the score for Wrath of Khan. And I talked to my friend Howard, who's into scores. And he's like, oh, no, Horner does it all the time. He'll just use the same cues in different movies. So
It would not surprise me whatsoever if you're thinking of The Rocketeer.
No. Well, let's put it this way. Jennifer Connelly in her prime in The Rocketeer. I'm not hearing anything.
Good point. That's me with Dark City. Same thing.
There you go.
So let's talk about the dead Andorian in the or Einar in the room.
And yeah.
Well, for one thing, I noticed that when he stepped outside the ship, he said it feels just like Andoria. He's not from Andoria, is he? Isn't he from a moon? I thought he was from a moon that around Andoria or something like that.
Well, he said that both times when they first got there. He's like, this reminds me of Andoria, and I was like, why didn't he just say this reminds me of home? So I haven't looked up the provenance of the Einar. I haven't seen it in, you know, 30 years or whatever.
I feel like the Einar are imagine they live in the Arctic Circle. They live up in ice caves somewhere.
That was my limited understanding.
So okay.
Icy ridge and icy mountainous. Yeah.
I thought it was kind of like a Romulus Remus kind of thing where they were
I think I'm also confusing Enterprise with like the Star Trek novels. I think Andoria is completely different in the novel universe. I think it is a moon of a larger planet, where I think in Enterprise it was just the planet or vice versa.
I've only seen that on Enterprise, and I haven't read the novels, so and my memory matches yours, so I'm presuming that it was from the show.
Okay.
Where it's on the same planet.
So when they were getting ready to leave the ship in the beginning of the episode, and we've already talked about the fact that there were two characters that we knew that were going to die, but then those two characters died really quickly once they got to the ship. And then I was watching, I mean, it was within 10 minutes, but they were both gone. And then, as I was watching it, I was like, okay, everybody else on this landing party has plot armor except Hemmer, but they're not going to kill Hemmer. Come on.
Oh, they did.
Especially since, you know, he really wasn't in this season as much as you think he was. He was missing for like four episodes.
Yeah, he was. I have a feeling he wasn't comfortable with the makeup. That's mine. I don't know. I haven't seen an interview one way or the other.
He was on this week's Ready Room, and he didn't really seem, I mean, it wasn't like,
yeah, no, they,
I can't
they
wait said to get out of this place.
They told him from the start of the season that he was not going into second season. Like, the,
yeah,
like it was planned. He was planned to die from jump.
Okay.
Which I think is a good choice to take one of your main characters and have them die by the end of the season, so that you know, and not all these characters have as much plot armor as we think. I mean, the ones obviously that we're going to see in later series, yeah. But I knew Lon wasn't going to die because I'm expecting the whole fact that she's related to Khan to have something to do later on in the series. But other than that, the only other one was him, or everybody else is on other shows.
I just feel like it's such a mistake because Hemmer was one of the most interesting choices for a cast member, and to bring back a type of alien that we've only seen once before. I thought it was so intriguing, and he was underused, and then he's finally getting interesting, and now he's gone.
Well, he was like the big plot, like fixie thing last week.
I just feel like they only used him in service of giving Uhura some kind of arc this season.
Other than that,
I think he could have been a much more better utilized character because there's just so much inherently interesting about the ANR. How did he get off of his planet into Starfleet? I mean, they're not, you know, I would love to hear how the ANR, since Archer found them with Shran, since they were introduced to the Federation, or even before the Federation, how that evolved.
Yeah, I didn't like Hemmer at first, and then, you know, I was saying to my wife earlier tonight, at least they learned, or seemed to have learned from what they did with Arium when they killed her off in Discovery, because a lot of people were complaining, and I think we may even have brought it up on the show. You know, we barely knew her, we got one episode where they gave us some background, and that was the same episode where they killed her. You know, at least we got enough buildup to Hemmer to give a damn when he died. Damn them.
Well, that's kind of the joke with Discovery, is that if you have a character that we've never focused on before and suddenly they're focused on them, they're probably going to die that episode.
Yeah.
So
I think that the misstep with Hemmer was, it's true, he was underutilized throughout the season. If they wanted him to be a bit of a mentor to a degree for Uhura, then they could have done that more. They could have leaned into that just a little bit more. It felt a little light on making him Uhura's mentor. And they did just enough to make him interesting. So when they took him away at the end of this episode, it was partly, oh, we care about this character, and now he's gone. That's emotionally impactful. But I'm sure for a lot of people, it was, I was just getting really excited to learn more about him, and now I don't get to learn more about him. Disappointed about what people missed out on, rather than sad to see this beloved character go. I think they got too much of one and not enough of the other, which, you know, there are worse things, but they could have structured the season a little bit differently to refine the emotional reaction that people got. Now, having said that, thinking that, you know, they could have done a little bit better, and maybe they didn't quite hit the mark they should have, I still found myself emotionally impacted by the scene. And a lot of that comes from the performances. What they missed out on with setting him up to be a character that you're sad to see leave, they made up for with the way they played that final scene. Because I didn't see it coming. And then when they made it clear that, you know, he was going to step outside, I had that moment of, no, they're going to find a way around this. They're not actually going to, oh, wow, they're actually going to do it. And then he turns around, he gives his final piece of advice to Uhura, and that's what took me out. So now I'm just sitting, I'm watching the rest of the scene. No. And then I tried to ignore the fact that his pose, his stance at the mouth of the shuttle bay. And was it a shuttle bay? Was it a cargo bay? Where were they?
I don't know. Oh, it was the shuttle bay because he jumped off the back end.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because there was a big door.
Yeah.
So, and he stood there and just let himself fall backward.
It was totally Aliens 3. It was totally Aliens
exactly. 3. Ripley's swan dive at the end of Alien 3. I tried not to think on that too much.
At least it didn't pop out of his chest and he cuddled it on the way down.
Grab it coming out of the side of his neck going, no, stay with me.
Yeah, I have to wonder, and I'm kind of taking a page out of your book, Scott. Do you think they're going to bring in Scotty next season?
No.
I had someone else ask me that too.
It's not time. Scotty didn't in canon, unless they go in and change canon. Scotty doesn't come on the ship until, 6 or 7 years after this. He comes on the ship before Kirk. Because I looked it up today. He comes on, what is this, 2258 or something like that? And Scotty doesn't come on the ship until 2265.
There's no canon like source that.
Says he comes on the ship at that point?
Guys, just correct me. Didn't we see Scott in a beige services tunic in the cage? Or am I thinking of where?
No, he wasn't in the cage, but he was in where no man has gone before.
So I'm thinking of the second pilot. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he comes on the ship before Kirk does, but I don't think he comes on the ship while Pike is in command.
Well, also, Scotty is one of the designers of the Enterprise. So, I don't doubt that you found a source that gave an exact date. That's probably from the novels, because there was no screen.
I think it's from the Star Trek Encyclopedia.
And also, it may be that he was permanently assigned at the time that you're thinking of, Sean.
Let me have your phone for a second.
He wasn't there as like a.
Let me have your phone for a second.
Yeah,
I need to look something up.
We're down a chief engineer. Can you fill in until we find somebody?
Mm-hmm. And to answer Rick's question, yes, I had that thought as well.
Me too.
I have the Star Trek Encyclopedia right here.
I would not like that. I mean, are we going to just turn this into TOS eventually? Are they going to get rid of all the original Strange New Worlds characters and just
keep
Pike in number one and that's it? And then everybody else is just everybody we know from the Enterprise? Is Sulu going to be in the botany department?
Except for Chekov, because Chekov comes way later.
Yeah, he doesn't come on until after TOS begins. Now, on the one hand, I agree with Chris. To bring on Scotty would be getting dangerously close to its TOS to early years, rather than its own series of Strange New Worlds. But on the other hand, I think I wouldn't mind seeing early days Scotty.
Okay. When Himmer was in the cargo bay, he's revealed that he's infected. And people on the other side of the door are shouting various things that they could try. And he was like, no, no, no. No, no, no. I was like, no, that's actually a good idea. Why wouldn't you? You could totally try that. Give it a... And I'm like, okay, well, they said that, the rate of gestation varies from creature to creature and person to person, and he's feeling that it's like he doesn't have time for any of that. And he basically said, I'm sure if you had more time. I'm like, okay, but how much time do you need? If you could freeze him or get him in the buffer.
Right. But they were having him in the buffer.
According to Memory Alpha, he becomes chief engineer of the Enterprise in 2265. So
that's I don't know where they're getting that from. The original series, right? 2265.
Yeah. All the encyclopedia says is his engineering career began in 2243.
But getting back to Hemmer and the buffer, weren't they having technical issues on the planet where they couldn't get signals? They couldn't. Do the shuttles in TOS have their own transporters? I don't think they do.
I presume that they couldn't beam him off of the ship.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. No.
Could they not just put him in the matrix on the ship that they were on? They were rebooting all the systems. That was their mission. And Pike says, okay, we've completed our mission. Things are coming back online.
They may not have even thought about this.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, if we didn't have a character who had been doing this for the past 4 years or whatever with his daughter as a medical solution, then okay, maybe they didn't think of it. But again, they were all there coming up with stuff. Like, they... I assume that there's...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I don't know if I would have been more annoyed if they didn't say anything of we could do this, if they just kind of let it go, like, oh, we understand, I wish you wouldn't, but we get it. Or the fact that they suggested things that... Even if they had shown... Maybe this is all I needed. Maybe I needed to see it start to come out.
That's what I was kind of wondering if they were going to... Like, the second time I watched it, I was like, are they going to... Did they? And they didn't. No.
They didn't. That would have tracked for me. Mm-hmm. That would have made sense. I know my body and I'm too far gone. Okay, well, maybe. But we're already like... We don't know enough to know what too far gone means. Again, in theory, they put him in the transporter. It removes all foreign elements. It's not like it infused with his DNA. It was basically a parasite.
I'm assuming that at least La'an. Okay, so La'an knew that once you get this stuff sprayed on you, that you're infected with babies or whatever.
No, sure.
But she didn't say anything to anybody.
She didn't know until it became clear.
Yeah.
I thought she grew up watching it happen.
No.
She didn't realize
that the spray was impregnated.
She thought, yes, they presumed that it was a neurotoxin. They didn't know that it was also...
Which I think it was, too.
But... Yeah.
Yeah, it serves a dual purpose. But the way I interpreted the episode was not that she knew it and kept it from everyone until the end and then finally sprang it. Oh, yeah, sorry. I maybe could have mentioned when it first happened, but he got beset with eggs when he got spit on. No, she was deducing that after seeing the result and seeing what it was becoming.
Yeah, she figured it out standing in front of him in the car.
Yep. Okay, because I got really upset at that because I was like, that's something you should have told them before they beamed down or before they went down to the ship. And I was like, don't let them spit this stuff on you.
The up and down video for this episode called her out for the same thing, saying, why didn't you say something sooner? It's because she didn't know.
No, she didn't know. Now
when Pike got the internal comms working,
when her big blue bodyguard starts, you know, quivering, she's like, oh, I got a thing.
I'm just going to go ahead and bounce to this spare bedroom over here. Excuse me for a moment.
You worth some little, I'm like, you could have, all she had to do was, because she could have warned Chapel. She was right there.
Yeah.
Like, he's infected.
He's about to burst. You need to come with me.
That would have been fine.
That was the only... I mean, this was not Newt. This was not someone who had lived with this for, you know, 5 or 6 years and had learned to survive. This was, you know, a few weeks ago this happened to her. So
No. Yeah, but she knew that because she just slowly inched her way to the cold zone. Because
she was scared to shit.
I get it.
And she watched all these adults do absolutely nothing to help her.
Except for these people. But she figured it out.
I mean...
And actually, that's not true because everybody did something to help her. Everyone tried to save her. Like she said that they took them out to the cold to sacrifice themselves to kill the last of them.
You have kids that age just like I do. How often do they do the logical thing?
Look, I'm not saying it's not what a... 8-year-old would do or whatever she was. I'm not saying it was unbelievable. But as you pointed out, they didn't give her character much. They could have given her character that, and it wouldn't have affected the outcome of the scene at all. She were, you got to get over here now. What?
Yeah.
But at least
we're not mad. We're disappointed.
But again, it's just like, why have the character at all? I mean, it just renders the character completely useless, except for saying, "Hey, we're doing aliens. Get it?" I just don't understand that there was no logical reason for her to be part of the plot.
She was
Strange New Worlds this season has loved to have children in peril. I mean, like, it's happened at least three or four times this season we've had child in peril.
She was for land. That was if you're looking at a narrative reason, it was for land.
Bob. Yeah, and that was my I don't want it to sound like I'm objecting to her being there at all. This was a prime example. They didn't do anything with her other than have her be there for La'an. And so her character really had no agency of her own. And as a parent and as someone who's been around kids, that is the way people who don't know kids write them.
Okay.
They're just there as baggage.
I'm going to dispute you.
Okay.
Based on what you just said. You said her character had no agency. But a minute ago, when I tried to give her agency, you're like, no. What kid do you know would do that? Yeah,
you're right.
That's what I thought.
You're right. I contradicted myself.
All right, we can wrap the show now.
I gotta say, I did love the La'an giving the golf swing, taking the head off of that frozen Gorn, and then smashing it to pieces in it. And yeah, it was all pink inside.
Right, to reveal its powdery goodness within.
Yeah.
I was like, I as I was watching it the first time, I went, okay, now shoot it in the head. Shoot it in the head.
Mm-hmm. Hasta la vista.
Well, I was like, you don't know if it'll unfreeze. So, okay, there you go. Smack it in the head. That'll work too.
Now, I don't know if y'all watched the Ready Room for this one, but
yes,
the visual effects on this were amazing because most of them were practical. they were puppeted, and then the puppets were augmented with CG to like take out the puppeteers and give them some more texture and sliminess and stuff, but there's a great thing at the very beginning of the Ready Room where they're showing some behind the scenes shots. One of the puppeteers has one of the little baby Gorns, and he's singing, "Hello, my baby. Hello, my."
Yeah. right from Spaceballs.
Rainbow
Connection.
That was going to be one of the two.
Yeah.
But I like, we were saying back in the first Gorn episode that we were kind of glad we didn't see them because we were worried about, what they would look like. I think they did a really great job with these Gorns. Now, granted, these are immature Gorn, and it's not unusual for reptilian species on Earth to be very different morphologically as immature ones than they become when they mature, because this is clearly a quadrupedal species right now. So they grow up,
they lose the ability to move. they have to move around like this.
And they did have the alpha stand up at the very end.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are certainly creatures who can do both. But I was impressed with what they did with the Gorn. I liked the visual look of it. I was pleased with it. Okay.
Yes.
Do we want to say anything about Spock's little temper tantrum?
Oh, that was I was not sure we were going to talk about it. But I actually enjoyed it. I was like, "Oh, Spock's doing beast mode, y'all." I actually said that out loud. It was only for a few seconds, but it was awesome.
It was weird that it's kind of like when in Star Trek 3 when they get to Vulcan, and they've got McCoy, who's got Spock's Katra in him, and Sarek goes up to T'Lar, and she's like, "What do you want?" And he's like, I ask for the Faltor Pawn." And she's like, "We haven't done that in 1,000 years, and even then it was a legend, but we have a name and we know how to do it." Yeah. Yeah. You know, so Spock's like, you know, Chapel's or La'an's like, "You got to get angry." And he's like, "I have a ritual for that."
I think
he doesn't have a ritual to put it back.
I think Spock and Chapel are going to end up hooking up at some point.
They're at least probably going to sleep together or something.
I think in the original series, she's always pining over him, but they didn't ever say that they didn't have a history. They just said that, you know, she's in love with him or whatever. So we could be seeing something happen between them and then it doesn't work out or whatever, you know. So.
Well, especially with him getting, you know, just being emotional at the end of the episode and their interaction in the hallway. I think it'll be next episode. Something's going to happen. And John, they're both going to regret it. Sorry.
He's got a ritual to bring it out, but not to put it back. Well, sure. They are masters of their emotion. I'm sure he does have a ritual to bring it out. And as we know from the body swap episode, you know, call it his half humanness, things don't always go according to plan when Spock tries to do emotion stuff or
Vulcan stuff. It's kind of like any wizard movie where they start playing with a spell book. You cast a spell and you can't figure out how to undo it.
Yeah. Well, this is supposed to work. Well, it's not working.
Never really occurred to me, though. Wouldn't, like, because Vulcans have not just like emotions, but violent emotions. That's why they had to adopt logic. And again, this is mainly book stuff, but still, they have a savage past. Mm-hmm. Spock being half human emotions are, you know, just baseline. Wouldn't that maybe help him temper his emotions, because maybe they wouldn't run as violently? They make it like that because he's human, he can't control the Vulcan emotions within him, or something like the human emotions augment his Vulcan emotions. Like, wouldn't they help curb the Vulcan emotions because he's more human than Vulcan?
I always took it as augment. It's like, it's the little hole in an airtight seal.
And honestly, I've never ever thought of that before right now. So I'm just spitballing here.
That's how I always saw it.
Well, we've seen his 50 or 60 year journey to learn that, you know, we're still at baby Spock here.
Yeah.
Star Trek babies.
So next week is the ultimate episode of season one of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. I've seen a little bit of what's coming up, and I think they're going to really lean hard into Pike's uncertainty about his future, or not actually, no, Pike's certainty of his future. Other than that, I don't know what's coming up. I mean, a lot of this episode felt a lot like a season ending cliffhanger with Uhura leaving and La'an leaving and Hammer dying. So it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with, you know, what they're going to hit us with next week to tear our hearts out and show them to us. Because that is something this show has done really well.
I would venture to say that Uhura is, they did not end this episode with La'an leaving and Uhura leaving. I would say they ended this episode with Uhura staying.
Because she looked at the communications panel as she was.
That final shot said to me, she's deciding to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she has to go back to the academy. Her training is over. She's got to go back to the academy. She may be back next season, but I don't think she's going to be in the finale.
Hmm. Well, she was out of like a couple other episodes too, so.
Well, I haven't seen any of the previews for next week because I understand they're a little spoilery or anything. Everything that I've seen says beware spoilers or whatever. Yeah. But I can't imagine. Hmm? Oh yeah. Yeah, but I can't imagine that they wouldn't focus on Pike and Number One for the season finale. I mean, it is technically they are the stars of the show, and we have not seen Una do anything since we found out she was Super Una.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm probably stealing that from Neek, but Neek pointed it out in her one of her comics in the last couple of weeks. But it's amazing how much they have sidelined Rebecca this season to the point where she's barely even a supporting character a lot of times. So I'd like to see them do something with Number One, especially
because she's getting ready to do the Love Boat. You haven't seen the commercials for the Love Boat?
The Love Boat.
They're rebooting the freaking Love Boat?
No, they're doing a reality show
of the Love Boat, and her and Jerry O'Connell are going to be hosting it.
God, oh, Lord.
I'm looking forward to it. The only preview I saw was the one that they showed on the Ready Room, and they're really good about not showing too spoilery a thing on the Ready Room. And this one wasn't, you know, and I won't even go into what it is, but it's just.
Yeah, I watched it. I wouldn't.
Usually the sneak preview that they give you. Yeah. It's always the pre-credits scene that they actually show you. So, or a piece of it anyway.
And I'm sure it's not all that spoilery at all. I just like to avoid stuff. That's all.
Same.
Yeah. The thing that I can say consistently with all of the new Trek shows is even when the stories aren't that solid, and I'm not saying this one was bad, not by a long shot. You know, you get to be once you hit a certain age, and you know, there's 55 years of Star Trek, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of it. It's real hard to come up with something we haven't seen already. So it's less a matter, in my opinion anyway, it's less a matter of do something different as it is. If you're going to do something we've seen before, do it really well. And I think they did this one really well. You know, if you've got some, you know, a bunch of people who have not seen Aliens, you know, this is part of our upbringing. We're all of an age where Alien and Aliens are, you know, we've known them our whole lives. But you know, if you've got some 20 something who, oh yeah, Alien, wasn't that some movie my dad watched, or you know, something like that, where they haven't seen this before,
I think this
was a really good execution, pardon the word, of this story.
Well, let me go back even further, Rick. At the very end, when they were doing the funeral, Ortegas mentioned that she thought Hemmer as a blue meanie. I'm like, my God, that makes me feel old.
That was an obscure reference, yeah.
I don't get it.
You've never seen Yellow Submarine?
Beatles.
It's a Beatles, Yellow Submarine.
You children. You always give really? Me crap for stuff I haven't watched, and you've never seen Yellow Submarine.
We both deserve crap for stuff you haven't watched. It's not an either or.
The only Beatles movie. Well, it wasn't a Beatles movie. It was the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band movie that the
Bee Gees did.
The Bee Gees.
Yeah,
did
it wasn't
it.
Even
yeah.
the Beatles. It was the Bee Gees doing Beatles music
Yeah, it was bad. I didn't like it.
Yeah, you were right about that.
going back to the point that you were making, Rick, about it's hard for them to show us something, a trick that we haven't seen before. I mean, that I think that's true of just about any kind of media now that you get to a certain age. There are only certain amounts of different kinds of stories that you can see. And after a while, you become astute at picking out where things are going to go because it's just the most convenient, the most relied upon method to tell a story. So it's really difficult to see something new, but Trek doesn't rely on anything new. Trek relies on being familiar, I think. And you don't mind seeing the same stories because you care about the characters. I think that Strange New Worlds is the first of the new Treks that has made me feel not as the affinity that I have with the TOS characters, but close to it. Prodigy is another one that's done it pretty well, like just a good affinity with the characters. I mean, I feel like, and I've said this before a million times on the show, I'd be hard pressed to name anybody but Burnham and Book on Discovery And it seems like they're just now learning how to bring some more character stuff in it, but they still do it very badly. Strange New Worlds does it very well. So I don't mind if they're showing us TOS rehash, because I like the people that are walking through that rehash. Next Gen was just a TOS rehash for the first season, but you got to know and like those characters, and you know, they went on for seven seasons of greatness. So I think that you just got to learn how to do human stories that resonate with people, and then you'll be into watched every week.
You're not wrong. My experience with Disco and Picard are different from yours, but I can certainly relate to yours. I have worked really hard to not dislike them. Because there are certain aspects of them that I really don't. I still don't care for the visual aesthetic that's come over from the you know, owes more to the JJ universe or the Kelvin universe than the Star Trek we're used to. But, you know, I also get why they're doing that, because there's a lot of people watching it that the Kelvin movies were their introduction to Star Trek.
Well, and Kurtzman so, too. I mean, Kurtzman.
And yeah, and Kurtzman's from that, yeah. From that. But I just,
also it's 2022. I mean,
I'm not talking about the quality of the effects. I'm just, there are certain aesthetics. There's certain aesthetics in Strange New Worlds I don't care for. Yeah, I love the bridge.
And that's what I'm talking about. I think that's more, you know, modern television. I could draw lines of similarity in the visual aesthetics from current Star Trek to The Expanse, a totally different franchise, but it's sci-fi being made in the 2020s. It's going to look like this.
Yeah. I just, you know, like the Klingon ships. I hate. Anyway, that's a whole other show.
I hate.
We'll
do
eventually on the Starbase.
I'll join you for that one.
But I think that the casting and the characterizations have been spot on. It was the same with the Kelvin movies. I didn't really like any of them, but I loved all the characters. I loved all the performers and the job they did bringing those characters to life, and that saved it for me for watching those movies. So I'm of course totally on board with any Trek. I think less than great Trek is better than no Trek at all. You know, this is a great time to be a Trekkie, because we're getting more Trek now than we ever got before. And I'm totally down for it, even if it's derivative or, you know, pisses me off, like Lift Us Up Where Sorrow Can't See What We're Doing, whatever it was. I'm totally here to see what's coming up next. I'm actually a little dismayed that, you know, when we started this, when did it start? It started with Prodigy, where we were like, they were like, all right, there's going to be Trek back to back to back to back for X amount of time.
Yeah, we've had almost a solid year of Trek almost every week.
And I know that I'm, you know, it's greedy of me to go, you know, especially after that 15-year drought, to go, oh, well, I can't believe we're now not going to get any day, you know, any weekly Trek for a while. But we're not going to get any weekly Trek for a while. So, and I'm going to bitch about it. And I'm not going to be ashamed of bitching about it, because I love Trek.
You're spoiled, man. You're just spoiled.
I am, and I don't give a shit about that.
You go back and give the Orville another shot.
See, he won't watch it. That's the problem. And it's gotten really good. The one this week is amazing.
Yeah, maybe when people really stop good.
Calling it Star Trek, I might be willing to give it
it's
a
actually,
shot.
It's actually, there are
don't listen to those people.
There's people saying it's better Trek than Trek.
And don't listen and to I'm those so people. Goddamn sick of hearing that.
Well, don't Jen, listen.
Why
to
would
people.
You say that? He just said that's the thing that's triggering.
It's not better than Star Trek, but it's good.
I just said this people season are saying good. That. I didn't say I was saying that. I'm just saying other people are saying that.
You don't have to listen to what they're saying.
I don't want to talk about the Orville. And I'm in charge of the show this week, so we don't have to talk about the Orville.
Nice.
So, as we wrap up this show, please, if you think what we're doing is worth a Federation credit or two, go to the Patreon and maybe, you know, toss a couple of bucks in the hopper so that we can untangle the Gorn-like tentacles of hosting. Wow, that was a really tortured metaphor. if you want to keep us going, folks, we could use some help. Go to Patreon. What is the Patreon, Sean?
Patreon.com/infinitepotato.
That one, yes. And you know, toss a couple of bucks so we can pay the hosting fees and stuff like that. Next week will be a show that I don't know that they've announced the name yet, or if
we're going to be talking about the Orville season 3 episode 6.
You just want him to rage, don't you?
Sean.
Yep.
Tell people where they can find you.
You can find me right here. You can find me on Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast. Just go over to infinitepotato.com and I'm there. You'll find me there.
Fantastic. John.
You can find me also often, not always here, and often not always on Cosmic Potato, but always on Captain Game Show, the Trivia Wordplay podcast of the Infinite Potato Alliance Network.
The Ruby. Chris, where can folks find you?
You can find me on the Quantum Leap podcast. That's quantumleappodcast.com. You can also find us on your favorite podcatcher. Just search for the Quantum Leap podcast. And we have a YouTube channel too, youtube.com/thequantumleappodcast. Exciting news. They announced the premiere date of the reboot, and it is going to be Monday, September 26th. We have 11 weeks until New Quantum Leap premieres on NBC. Hooray, hooray, hooray. QuantumLeapPodcast.com. Come on and listen. We're having a great time over there.
And there was much rejoicing. Jen.
I'm around. I kind of pop up wherever, mostly on here, mostly on Cosmic Potato, occasionally on Starbase 66 when we do it. I've been on the Doctor Who podcast a couple times. I've been on Captain Game Show a couple of times. I kind of bounce all over. So, yeah.
Scott, give the spiel.
I'm going to try to change it up a little bit. I can be heard in various places on this network. Want to find me? Just listen to everything. That's the best way to do it, really. Or if you're tired of listening to me, you can check out some of my nonverbal graphic artwork on my very own website, www.planetrisecreative.com. Also on Twitter, @PlanetRise. Not as active on the website or Twitter as I should be, but there's still stuff there if you're interested in checking it out.
The hell was that?
Fireworks.
Oh, okay.
That's been happening like all night. I was like, yeah, that's
yeah, they're shooting fireworks right outside of here.
Okay, that was a well-timed firework. And folks, you can find me. Okay, here I've got a bit of an announcement. The Starbase has been kind of languishing. If you are listening to the show currently, as in early July 2022, you know that the world is kind of going to hell right now, and has been for a while. And I have been kind of stuck in a, how can I do something as frivolous as podcasting when all of this stuff is going into the shitter? And I kind of had a bit of an epiphany the other day, in that I think now more than ever, people need entertainment. And those of us who create content for entertainment really need to step up and stop wallowing in self-pity and get out there. And I mean, I don't know, you know, a lot of my problem has been, you know, this stuff is so awful and I have absolutely no way to do anything about it. Other than, you know, what anyone else can do, which is, you know, vote when the time comes up. But I am going to make a concerted effort to do stuff to help people smile and help not necessarily take their minds off of what's going on, and maybe enjoy, you know, life for an hour or so. So to that end, I have contacted all of my Starbase hosts and we are going to start very soon recording episodes of Starbase 66 again. I can't say exactly when that will be starting up, but it's going to be within the month. So hopefully you'll be able to hear me on Starbase 66 very soon. I think that Open the Iris, the Stargate SG-1 show, will be coming back next week. I haven't talked to Ro yet, but hopefully we will be sticking to our schedule and come back with that. And you can also find me on here on this Star Trek, that Star Trek podcast, and also on Cosmic Potato, and occasionally on Captain Game Show. So from all of us to all of you, live long and prosper. I didn't write a catchy, silly joke for the end like Sean always does, which just shows how much better he is at this shit than I am. So
you live longer, but he prospers.
Thank you all for joining me tonight. Folks, thanks for listening. Thanks to the few of you that were actually watching. And we will be back next week. Take care and bye-bye.